Hey, my name is Jen. I'm a grateful believer in Jesus Christ, and I'm going to be doing the teaching tonight. We're on principle four, and last time we taught, we looked over the inventory and the chart that Celebrate Recovery uses to plot out your inventory. Well, I kind of feel like they do it a little backwards. They tell you all about the chart and that you need to fill it out, but then you're like, don't know what to put on it, right? At least when you're in the step study and you're going along and you're in the book two, and they introduce this whole chart system, and I don't know, I think most people start to feel a little overwhelmed. They're like, oh my gosh, this chart, how am I supposed to fill it out? Well, tonight we're going to talk about how to fill that out. And essentially, lesson 10 is what we're going to walk through. And it is a whole bunch of questions that are the long answers to what end up being your very concise things you put on your chart. And I'm going to kind of talk through how that's going to happen. And for those of you who have already been through a step study, maybe you have this one down. Please don't snore if I bore you. That's really nerve-wracking to the speaker. But I don't know, pay attention. You might hear something new, something different that you didn't consider before. If you've been through a step study and perhaps missed this whole part of the explanation, then next time you do it, you'll maybe have a better understanding. So hey, whatever, if you haven't been through a step study, this is all new information, so hopefully it's riveting and you're on the edge of your seat tonight. So principle four, openly examine and confess my faults to myself, to God, and to someone I trust. We just went over the principles. The verse that goes along with that from the Beatitudes is, happy are the pure in heart. That's Matthew 5:8. That coincides with our step four. Very similar. We made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. A searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. That sounds a little challenging and slightly scary. But don't worry. It's not an overwhelming thing if you take it a little bit at a time. The verse that goes along with that is, let us examine our ways and test them, and let us return to the Lord. So pretty much, I'm just going to go through the step study book, because that's all this lesson is about, is what you do when you're in a step study. And like I said, these are the long answers. So your blanks are real simple tonight. There's four blanks. I'm going to tell you when I say one of the blanks, and then I'm going to do a lot of talking, and then I'm going to tell you another blank again. So the first blank is relationship with others. So when you're in a step study, you have a couple questions that they ask you. And these questions correlate to column one on that chart that we showed you last time we taught, 2 weeks ago. So column one on your chart, these are the questions that you're going to answer in the step study, that those answers you'll find will be the things that you put in column one. Who has hurt you? Against whom have you been holding a grudge? Against whom are you seeking revenge? Are you jealous of someone else? You know, Don Henley has a great song, The Heart of the Matter. I quote this one a lot. He says in there, if you keep carrying around that anger, it will just eat you up inside. We know that to be true. Most of us who find ourselves in a place like Celebrate Recovery have come to understand that it's been because we're carrying around a lot of hurt, a lot of hang-ups, some bad habits probably that we've used to try to cope with those things throughout the years. What you are able to get out on paper and start revealing to yourself, because sometimes it's not so much talking poorly about somebody, but it is more about allowing yourself to sit in whatever it is that that person communicated to you in a way not to drag yourself down, but to really allow yourself the opportunity to bring that into reality. I don't know about you guys, but when I was working through a lot of my recovery, I was really numb. And I talked stuff and I did stuff, but I was emotionally really numb. And so when you do this lesson within the context of a step study, I really hope and pray that you allow yourself to start to not just say and do the actions but to sit in those emotions and those realizations. So who has hurt you? Against whom are you seeking revenge or holding a grudge? Now, conversely, those are for column one. Conversely, column five is answered in the next part of the relationship piece. Who have you hurt? Who have you criticized or gossiped about? Have you justified your bad attitude by saying, it's their fault? We do these things. The column one and column five are kind of like a pendulum swing that we do. And in between that pendulum can be ambivalence. So we can go from one side of the coin and saying, these people hurt me, these are legitimate things, nobody can argue these facts, and they can't. But then we'll swing over in ambivalence and end up doing sometimes the exact same things or very similar things to others. Because we learn in recovery that hurt people. So we want to be cognizant of this, that there is a pendulum that exists and ambivalence swings you back and forth. So just be aware of that, that if you realize that you're really mad about somebody else, and I mean, I do this all the time. I just had to apologize last night for doing this. I was thinking about something, and not that I was hurt, but I took it out on somebody else that was not really deserving. And so just be cognizant of this. This exists. It happens all the time. If you find yourself in that cycle, don't think that you're an awful person. It's just what everybody goes through. So it's kind of normal. So that's the first blank, and that deals with column one and column five of our chart. The next blank on your page down there is priorities in life. Your priorities in life. This is column two, the cause on the chart. The questions that go along with that is, after accepting Jesus Christ, in what areas of your life are you still not putting God first? Principle three says that we are turning our life and our will over to Christ's care and control. That was a principle that we talked about right before we got to this one. And if you've gone through that process, or you're trying to go through that process of learning to commit your life and your will over to Christ's care and control. So to me, that was a big one, because for one, I didn't really think God cared about me. So how could I just couldn't comprehend putting my life, my emotions in Christ's care, because I wasn't really sure he cared about me. I knew he loved me because he's God and God has to love, right? At least that's what I thought. I grew up in church, and so like, God is love. Yes, he has to love me because he's God. But I didn't really think he liked me or cared much about me. So I had to really wrestle with that. And that caused me, because we're talking about column two, the cause, that caused me to have a lot of pain that was probably unnecessary in my life, because I was looking through a lens of not being confident that God really cared about me and that he really wanted to be in control of all the elements of my life. So I grew up in church. I accepted Jesus when I was really young. I rededicated my life and took it very seriously when I was 12. Thought I was living a really good Christian life, but I was having all these hurts and hang-ups and had all kinds of bad habits that were not really reflecting God's character in me. And in fact, that's kind of one of the things that we want to realize as we go through this process, is that in recovery, we refer to them as character defects. Some people don't really like that term. We'll also say like, hey, okay, so if you have a character defect, then you also have character assets, right? You know, so there's the good, but there's also, there's the bad, but there's also the good that we have, and we always want to keep things balanced. But it's kind of funny to think about, our character can take on three things. What we exhibit. So what people kind of see in our actions is, can be our character. What we think we're exhibiting, because sometimes what the people that we think we are aren't really who we're acting like. And then the character that we truly have. And the process of recovery is discovering where we're incongruent with the character that we think we have and the character that we're displaying, and try to work through those incongruencies. But more so, the reason that we introduce ourselves as, I'm a grateful believer in Jesus Christ who struggles with whatever, I want to identify with Christ and identify my character with his truth of who he's created me to be. My identity has to shift from being centered on what I think I have and what I think I do, and it needs to turn around and be focused and embrace who Christ has created me to be and who he says I am. And therefore, I then can act more accordingly to the model that Christ has set for me. So this is all in this process. The column number two, what has caused the hurt in our life? What can directly correlate to the way that we see Christ and our relationship with him? The other question is, what is your past? What in your past is interfering with your doing God's will, your ambition, your pleasures? See, these decisions that we make sometimes based on the hurt that we've received, sometimes because we're hurt, then we put ourselves in harm's way. We'll repeat cycles. Like we said already, hurt people hurt people. And so if all you understand is a hurtful cycle, then we'll continue to put ourselves in harm's way until we learn a healthy alternative. And that's why we're here in recovery. Matthew 12, 34b says, "For the mouth speaks what the heart is full of." And also Luke 6:45 says, "A good man brings out good from the good stored up in his heart. An evil man brings out evil from the evil stored up in his heart. For the mouth speaks what the heart is full of." When we allow ourselves to store up good in us and experience healing instead of hurt, we are then able to see things in a more clear way and then be able to offer amends. Because the whole reason we do our inventory is to be able to offer amends to ourselves, to God, and to others. We can't forgive ourselves if we don't understand God's forgiveness towards us. And I know a lot of us come into this room and come into recovery with a pretty solid belief that I will never forgive so-and-so. What they did to me was so bad, so hurtful, I just can't ever envision myself forgiving them. That's a legitimate feeling. That's a valid thought. God challenges us in our recovery, and as we work through this process of our inventory and answering these questions, he will challenge you and show you all the ways that he has forgiven you. And when you start to practice forgiving yourself, eventually you can get to a place where you really sincerely, truly can forgive that other person. It's not easy. It takes time. But it's completely possible. And a lot of us in this room have discovered that and can testify to the truth of that. If that seems like it's far-fetched and a load of baloney to you, that's okay. Stick around. Keep coming back. Don't be threatened by that. Just keep working the process. The Lord is patient. He's kind. He's not in a hurry. Neither are we. You'll get through there. You'll get yourself there. Don't worry. The other question is, what have been your priorities in your life? Your job, your friendships, your personal goals? Selfishness turns life into a burden. Unselfishness turns burdens into life. Let me say that again. Selfishness turns life into a burden. Unselfishness turns burdens into life. That's a miracle that you can have when you work recovery. The things that are weighing us down and holding us stuck in our ways, those are our burdens. Sometimes they're rooted in our own selfishness. We arrive there because of the hurts in our lives. We don't feel safe and secure enough to let go of that selfishness. Not yet, perhaps. But working in a process like this allows you the time, the space, and the security to start feeling like, hey, I can let this go. Again, putting it into Christ's care and control, like Principle 3 says. Who did your priorities affect? What was good about your priorities? And conversely, what was wrong about them? You know, sometimes we have really good priorities. A priority to wake up and to pray and read your Bible every day, that's a great priority. The priority to put God first in your life and to do things that are enriching you and helping you to feel closer to the Lord, that's a great priority. Not all of our priorities are bad. Sometimes we come in here with some pretty good ones, and allow yourself the opportunity to recognize those and to pat yourself on the back like, hey, man, I'm not all bad. I'm on the right track here in a couple things. Maybe in a lot of areas you're on track. Maybe it's just a couple things that are holding you back. So give yourself the opportunity again. Point out the good in this process, because the Lord has definitely given us things that we can be thankful for. The third thing on your sheet is your attitude. There's a verse that goes along with that. Get rid of all bitterness, passions, and anger. No more shouting or insults. No more hateful feelings of any sort. Oops. So some questions that go along with that. Do you always try to have an attitude of gratitude? Or do you find yourself always complaining about your circumstances? In what areas of your life are you ungrateful? You know, if we can't be grateful for the bad things in our lives that we have received, you know, a lot of us has come in. We're heavy. There's a lot of bad stuff that we're seeing right in front of us. They seem to be those glaring neon lights that are attracting our attention. And they don't really seem like things that you can be grateful for. But in recovery, we want to always remind ourselves that there is at least one thing that we can be grateful for. And that is the things that the Lord has allowed us to escape. The things that the Lord has allowed us to escape. We might have had a lot of bad things happen to us, but I can guarantee there was some things that he allowed you to escape, that he protected you from, that he kept you safe from. Be grateful for those. And obviously, the best church answer is to be grateful for Jesus and the victory that we have in him. That's from 1 Corinthians 15:57. So we can always go to the bank on that one, that we do have ultimate victory. Even if it's a struggle now, we have ultimate victory in heaven, where we get to be free of all this hurt and the habits and the hang-ups that we wrestle with. We get to be free of the flesh, free of the hurts and the evil in this world. So we ultimately always can hang our hat on that one, go back to the Lord and say, man, in the end, I'm going to win. In the end, I win through Jesus. So that's definitely something that we can be grateful for. Let that affect your attitude. Have you always gotten angry or easily blown up to people? Have you been sarcastic? Which I want to remind us that the Greek root of the word sarcastic is the tearing of flesh. So when you're sarcastic, you're tearing someone's flesh. Consequently, sometimes you might wonder, why did that hurt me so bad? I mean, what they said, it really wasn't that bad, but it really hurt a lot. Well, maybe it was said in a sarcastic way, and that's why it tore so deep. What in your past is still causing you fear or anxiety? These are all good things that we can think about and consider, because in column 3, that's the effect. And the effect is purely just the feelings that have gone along with the damages that we've sustained from the people or the things in column 1. So it essentially goes backwards. In column 3, you're talking about the feelings that are associated with column 2 that are associated with column 1. And we get to those feelings when we answer some of those questions that I just mentioned. The last thing is column 4, the damage. And the last blank is your integrity. Here in Celebrate Recovery, we refer to the damage column as three basic things. It's damaged our social part of our life, it's damaged the security part of our life, or it's damaged our sexual part of our life, our intimate part of our life. I can take anybody's inventory and look at everything that they damaged and identify one or multiples of it was a social impact, a security impact, or a sexual slash intimacy impact on whatever you put in that column. So I always bring my sponsees back to that, because the more you can identify one of those three categories, maybe one is really dominant. And that can be really eye-opening to a sponsee to see that, oh, wow, man, my sense of security has totally been wrecked. Or my sense of social belonging has just been squished. No wonder I'm so anxious or whatever. Or my sense of intimacy, that's, no wonder I struggle so much in my marriage or in relationships with significant others because of the damage that we've gone through. And the inventory really points those things out. So the questions, I can identify each question with one of those categories. In what past dealings were you dishonest? That's a social thing. Being dishonest towards other people affects you socially. An honest man alters his ideas to fit the truth. A dishonest man alters the truth to fit his ideas. And that's an integrity thing. Only you know a lot of times if you're being a person of integrity or not. So consider this. Have you stolen things? Again, that's a social impact. Our needs are very compelling and can drive us to justify many things because we can say, but I need this. Dishonesty can seem very justified in our brokenness, because usually in life, what's gotten us to need recovery has been the sheer bottom fact that we have not had our needs met in a healthy way. When our needs are not met in healthy ways, that damages us. The pursuit of trying to figure out how to get your needs met in healthy ways is the journey of recovery. So we can heal those damaged pieces when we learn how to meet our needs in healthy ways and not justify our dishonesty. Have you exaggerated to make yourself look better? Well, that's affecting our sense of security. If somebody is exaggerating or making things up, yeah, that's a dishonest thing, but the place where that's coming from is a sense of insecurity. Got to make yourself look better than you are. You know how they say that you'll hang around people that you think are dumber than you or worse than you because somehow that makes you feel smarter or better? It's an insecurity. It's the truth. She's laughing at me, but it's the truth. But in the Bible, it says that a wise man pursues the counsel of somebody who's better than them. So in recovery, we face our insecurity and we seek out people who might have something that they can share that would help us be better, that would teach us, that would challenge us, that would encourage us towards a pursuit of something that's more excellent. A lot of times that's your sponsor. That's sitting in small group, listening to the other folks in your small group. That's being in a step study, listening to the people around you sharing their answers. Whatever situation it is, pursue people who seem better than you. Not in a fake way, but just they have something you don't have that's better, that's healthier, that's more godly. Rub shoulders with those folks. Learn what they can offer. Be a pupil or a student of wanting to learn how to become a healthier, more broad person, more balanced. It goes a long way to heal that damaged part of you. In what areas of your past have you used false humility? That's another sense of security thing. Have you lived one way in front of your Christian friends and another way in front of your work buddies or in your home or whatever? I could say, are you a CR person around your CR friends and not so much of a CR recovery person around your not CR friends or work people? You could ask yourself the same thing. It applies. That one actually affects all three. When you find yourself kind of two-faced, living a double life, that's a social impact, because then what happens when you're in the room with the two different crowds, or possibly three or four different crowds that you've kind of become a chameleon to? So what happens if those who ever cross? Ooh, oops, which one do you act like? Oops. So that could be extremely socially awkward. It's also rattling your sense of security, because then below all of that, who are you? And the ever-taunting question that pursues anybody who's caught in this is, but if they really knew me, would they like me? And you're robbing yourself of the answer by pretending in all these arenas. You have to figure out who you are and who God's made you to be. Present that person, and I guarantee people will like you, because God don't make junk. Sorry, God don't make junk. If you're living and acting the way God created you to be, people are going to love it, because God don't make junk. It's a guarantee. This pretending stuff, this fake stuff, this chameleon stuff, it gets real hard to do, gets confusing, it's really draining, it takes a ton of energy, because you got to remember which one to do in front of what people. And it's draining you and robbing you of that experience of really, truly being accepted, because you're allowing that fear of the unknown of whether people would like you if they really knew you. It's just a big block for you. It can also obviously impact your sexual and intimate part of your being, because again, how many times have you dated somebody and after a while you're like, oh, didn't know that about you. Not too sure about this relationship now. So imagine if you're married or you're in a serious relationship with somebody and you're really struggling with this whole part of who you are and can I really let people get to know me? And how did you start that relationship that you're in? And is that going to like pull the rug out from under that relationship? I don't know. It might. I would say if it does, it's not a healthy relationship. You probably should not be in it. But it may actually make it a whole heck of a lot better. Because I've witnessed other people's lives who've come into recovery, and when they started being more honest and open with their spouse, man, the relationship just blossomed and grew beyond their wildest dreams. So don't let that one impact your ability to be intimate with somebody, because it actually can release you and bring a lot of freedom. So those are the questions that you go through when you're doing the step study that really start getting your wheels thinking and unpacked what's going on the inside. Those answers that you give in your step study, you then can now see where each one of those categories point you back to the chart. So then as you're working those out, the things that are really sticking out and tugging at your heart, put those on your chart. You may not put everything on your chart, but really what the Lord's going to make it evident to you what you need to start working on and get down on your chart. So that's how you do that. The next time we teach in 2 weeks, we're going to talk about the second part of the spiritual inventory, which will be a few more ways that you can pull some stuff out and identify things and put them on the chart as well. But that hopefully helps make some sense out of the spiritual inventory or the inventory that we do here in Celebrate Recovery, and how those apply to our step 4 and working our searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. So thanks.